Good afternoon. I'm Mike Bender, Dean of Libraries at Western. It's my pleasure to greet you. This is the third stage of our One Campus, One Community, One Book program. Western offers this in concert with its partners, Bowling Green Public Library and Barnes & Noble. And I'm happy that Lisa Rice from Bowling Green Public Library is here today. So, Lisa, could you wave? Thank you. Later at the public library, 6 o'clock tonight, our speaker will be giving another presentation, and tomorrow at Barnes & Noble. It's kind of the pattern that we follow, and it's been working well. This is the third year of the program, and we now have something called a One Campus, One Community, One Book Selection Committee. And Dale Rigby, Assistant Professor of English at Western, has served on that, and he's a great supporter of university libraries and our outreach events, and I'm pleased that he is here to introduce our speaker. Dale?
Hi, I'm honored to kind of, I've been asked to help warm you guys up for the Q&A with Bobby Ann. And she graduated from the University of Kentucky in 1962. She actually went and got a PhD eventually. In the course of numbers of years, she did some more academic writing, with writing about passions from Vladimir Nabokov to Nancy Drew. If you haven't read Nancy Drew, please do. Even Elvis Presley. She's going to come up here and is happy to answer any of your questions. And if you would, just step up to the mic. You can form a line like you will tonight for later readings and ask her whatever you'd like to ask her, okay? Thanks.
Thank you. I'm glad you quoted that, Emmett, about that about history, because I was trying to quote that to the Daily News reporter who's here earlier, and I wasn't sure I had it quite right. And I don't know any of that music, the current music, but what I was doing with the music, the music Sam was hearing in the present in the novel, that's the music I was hearing on the radio, and then born in the USA especially, and then she's looking back to the 60s and finding an affinity with that music because it was her parents' music. So I guess I saw Born in the USA or Springsteen as a connection between that music and the present, a bridge, I thought of it. So, what can I tell you?
Hi. This question is both about In Country and your most recent novel, Anatomic Romance. And it seems as though you have a lot of characters who often want information, such as Sam with the war, and but are often reluctant to know the truth. Similar with Reed, who is wants information about
and
his exposure.
Novel.
That is your novel.
And Atomic Romance.
Which I thoroughly enjoyed.
Thank you.
A side note. But if you might comment on this issue of seeking information versus knowing the truth, and possibly truth with a capital T in that way.
It just seems to be part of our society that we want to be blind to certain realities, or many people do. And in country, people didn't want to think about the war. It was too terrible, so you're trying to bury that in the back of your mind. And Sam is the one, the new generation with a lot of energy, and it's all new to her, and so she wants to find out the truth, while the others have already, they've been dealing with that, and they've decided on how they're going to deal with it by hiding from it, many of them. An atomic romance. Romantic couple, Julia and Reed, have different views about finding out the truth. Reed works at this uranium enrichment plant where there's a lot of radioactive waste that has piled up since the 50s. And nobody wants to think that this is dangerous, especially if you work there, because you have your dignity and your pride and your job. So you rationalize. You make up stories about why you have to continue working there. You need the money, you need the job. It's a good thing to be doing because you're providing nuclear fuel for the power plants. And you can rationalize that the toxic waste was from an earlier time. It's not now. This is not the way we do things now. So you can evade experience by making up a scheme to deal with it so that you don't have to face it. So it just seems to me part of human nature, and that gets carried away sometimes. But it's interesting that you're asking the parallel, because in an atomic romance, the radioactive waste is out in a wildlife refuge. So once again, you have a character who's camping out in the woods, and not the swamp, but the wildlife refuge. Thank you for asking about that.
I was curious if Sam's character and yourself have anything in common, since you're both from a rather small town and go to university, and I was just wondering what the similarities are.
Well, I was a teenager once, so I knew what that was like. She's quite different from me, because I was quiet and withdrawn and bookish, and she's stomping around. She's a runner, and she's always asking questions blatantly, and her personality is quite different. But I think that curiosity probably I identify with, and that need to know things, and that rejection of the status quo. I was always bookish, but I didn't always have any guidance in what to read. So all I read in my childhood was those mystery series and the commercial children's books. And I read Little Women when I was about 10 or 11, and that probably was the turning point. Because Joan March was a writer, Louisa May Alcott was a writer, so that gave me the notion. But after that, there wasn't anything until college that made me think about being a writer. And I think it's because I was introduced to literature then. So after college, I didn't know how to make a living writing short stories, so I went to graduate school. And there weren't any writing programs to speak of.
I saw the movie during one of our showings recently. I was wondering about the difference between the book and the movie. I know one thing was, the movie was about 5 years later, and they didn't use as much of the music. And how did you feel about the adaptation of the movie from the book?
I thought they did a very respectable job, because they were very respectful of the book, and everyone who worked on it seemed to be thrilled to be working on it, something serious. And so that was all very, very good. And of course, it's not as complex as the book. There were some things that were just off in a different direction, and they didn't understand the music. They didn't use the music at all in any way that represented what I was doing in the book. And one thing that stands out is that whenever Hollywood has young people and older music, it's always it's a cliche. Like, what is this that our parents listen to? Who was Country Joe and the Fish? And that wasn't what I had in the book. Sam knew this music because she had shared it with him and Irene. And so that was one small point. And of course, Born in the USA didn't enter into it at all, even though they did use a very evocative Springsteen song. and that worked well, but it had nothing to do with the Vietnam War or anything. So the rest of the music just, they did some country music because they decided that Lonnie was a country boy, the same way they decided that the graduation scene at a high school should not be in the auditorium, but should be outside with people bringing picnic baskets and wearing overalls. So, you know, little things like that they missed. But and also I think the main thing was that it became Emmett's story because it was Bruce Willis.
I was hoping you could talk to the students and help me out as a writing teacher. And I want to share my favorite, very idiosyncratic two lines from here about Mrs. Castle. And then I'll ask you to talk to them. It's right when Sam is reading her father's letters to her mother. He wrote about the pleasures of getting Irene's letters and the way he missed her, but he never said what he really meant, and this is what I love. Mrs. Castle in English said, always be specific. He told Irene not to worry. He made marching through the jungle seem like a rare privilege. Now, as a writing teacher and the students, they get, I'm sure, just frustrated as heck with us. You know, we say, please be specific, concrete particulars, and it probably just seems like some kind of one of those rules that's there for no reason. Can you explain a little bit why there's a difference in this context or in their writing about being specific or not specific?
Well, to me, writing, the way I go at something like this is to collect details and then fool around with them and find a place for them. I absolutely did not start with the idea that I will write a novel that shows the effects of the Vietnam War on a family. That was the last thing that occurred to me. I don't know if I explained this in the back. When the inspiration for this novel, I was driving down a street in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and there were a couple of kids, boy and girl, on the sidewalk selling flowers to motorists. I thought, well, this is a big town, but back in Mayfield, if a couple of kids did that, it would be very strange. I thought, I wonder what I could do with this detail, the selling flowers on a street corner, and would they be roses or carnations or what? I started writing, and magically, and this doesn't always happen, Sam and Lonnie were there, and they were selling flowers in a small town, Hopewell, I guess, out of Lonnie's van. Lonnie had a van, and they had graduated from high school, and there were hardly any jobs because there was a... I can't remember what the economic circumstances were then, but it was very hard to get a job. They were selling flowers out of the van and on the courthouse square. And this was not very promising. And then Emmett appeared. And he was very interesting, I thought. And then Sam's mother appeared. And so I had this collection of characters. Who were they? And for some reason, Emmett was wearing a skirt, another specific detail. Why was he wearing a skirt? Was it because I had just seen a Phil Donahue talk show in which a guy was a guest in which he was wearing a skirt, and he said, well, it's much more comfortable for men because they don't get all cramped up and stuff. And I didn't know what to do with these characters. So Emmett was a little funny. And couldn't explain this. He seemed to be an outsider. And I didn't know what it had to do with wearing the skirt. I wrote on this story. various ways. It was a short story. It didn't work as a short story. It became a novella in which Emmett dies at the end, but that was depressing. Well, and what was that all about? And it was a long time before it occurred to me that he was a Vietnam veteran. And if so, then he was looking for a bird, a specific bird, the egret, because it reminded him of Vietnam, the birds he saw there. And so one thing led to another, but it was always what these details said about the characters. And I didn't know anything about Sam's father. I figured that her parents were divorced. And I didn't do anything with that for a long time until one day it occurred to me that he got killed in Vietnam. And that this is the first moment, this year is the first moment when a young person whose father died in Vietnam the year she was born, this is the moment when she's coming of age. And then I knew that because she was 17, that this was a novel. And not only just a story, it had an important theme. And I usually don't think about themes. They just kind of emerge, and this did. But I'd been writing all over the map with this story, not knowing what it was about, until I realized that. And then the flowers disappeared. I threw out the flowers. And but anyway, I veered off your question a bit, but I think the importance of the details, this is what you build the story out of. You can't say, here are these interesting characters who, and Emmett was in Vietnam and Sam is graduating from high school. That's the bare bones outline. That's not the texture or the imagery, like the way Sam liked to pick those fleas off the cat and pop them. I mean, that's disgusting, but it fits in with other details in there when she gets to the swamp. And all this imagery of fleas and bugs, there are bugs all through, the Jesus bugs. Anyway, that's the level I really like to work with when you can make something jump out and come to life because of a sensory detail, like the Jesus bug walking on water, and just the Sam's behavior, the way she has these responses to things that are very telling of her personality. Well, I'm kind of straying into abstraction here, but the details are what I love most of all. And so I was writing down song titles and just plugging in all these things. And so I tend to think that a character is built out of these details when it comes to life that way. The earrings. Wasn't there an image of the earrings being like bloated ticks? I mean, I just had lots of bugs.
Talking of the details, one of the details is the name on the memorial wall in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
Really?
Well.
Is that a real person's name, or someone you know of?
Sam Allen Hughes. Mm-hmm. Sam finds her own name on the wall and her father's name.
Yeah.
But there's also her own name. It's a man's name, a soldier. A soldier with her name died. And that, you know, that was prompted by the fact that I found my own name on the wall. And it was such an eerie feeling. And I always find it interesting when somebody has the same name as you. It's like sharing an identity in some level.
Well, Diane, to go back to your writing, since one sort of sperm writers in the room, do you find yourself with an outline? What's your discipline of writing? Do you,
as you were gathering all these characters, did you start writing a little bio about each of them?
No, I didn't. Just write down stuff and see what happens. It's a process of discovering. Just write randomly, and then something interesting will pop up, and then that'll lead to something else. And then I pay attention to the sound of words and the dialogue and the rhythm of it, and just whether it's interesting or not. The story will emerge from that. I can't make an outline and then expect to fill it out, because you set yourself up with too many rules and don't leave yourself free enough to let these things come to you in your imagination. So once I'm very far along with it, several drafts, and I know what the story is and where it's going, and the characters are becoming more and more real, then I might go through and say, well, what have we here? And list the characteristics of Emmett, and then go through the book and see the pacing, see where... how that's spread out. And I might make a list of all the image patterns, and that can teach you a lot about what's been going on in your mind. You discover, oh, well, I am writing about bugs an awful lot. Now, why is that? And it then it seems to have to do with this attitude that the soldiers had toward the Viet Cong, and Sam gets that worked out in her mind so that she thinks that when Emmett sets off the flea bomb, that it's analogous to Americans killing the Viet Cong, who they decided were subhuman. So there's a lot you can discover about metaphor and imagery after you've done it. and then that gives you the ability to work with it and shape it and have some control over it. But I think for the most part, you've got to get the story through the imagination. And then I go at it in stages of writing and rewriting, writing and rewriting. And so the writing is more the imaginative, irrational stage or level. And then rewriting, you're calling upon your more critical faculties to say, well, does this work? Is the dialogue too long here? Would this character say that really? And, you know, those kind of critical questions. So I think the first year I didn't do much of anything with it. And then I want to say 3.5 years, but I'm not sure. It may have been 2.5. I met a young woman recently. She came up to me at a book festival in Nashville last fall, and she said, I've been trying to find you. She said, I didn't know where to write you. I wanted to give you my book. She said, my father was killed in Vietnam, and I wrote the story of the effect on my family. I said, you're Sam. It was very emotional for both of us because this had not happened to me. I had not met somebody who could have been Sam. She's from my imagination. And suddenly there was a person there who... fulfilled that role. I always think of Sam as the daughter I never had, and suddenly there was a person. I felt somewhat that way when I watched a few scenes from In Country being filmed. The characters became tangible, which was pretty cool. But anyway, her name is Karen, Zacharias, and she wrote a book called Hero Mama, and it's about how her mother raised the children after the father was killed in Vietnam, and about her own rage that this happened. And she's quite active in being involved with veterans groups and with monitoring what's happening right now with families and the current wars. And she's keeping count of how many children there are who have lost a parent in Iraq or Afghanistan, and I don't know what the count is right now, but as of last October, it was over 2,000. So there are 2,000 families, at least, that have the story in one way or another, and it's something to think about.
Could you discuss the roles that Agent Orange and MASH play in the novel? Is that too specific?
Agent, you should always be specific. Let's see, Agent Orange was widely thought to cause all kinds of ills, from birth defects to cancer. And if you were exposed to it, it's a chemical called dioxin, and it's in a lot of domestic products, or it has been, I don't know if it is currently, like paper towels. I'm not sure how it turned out with Agent Orange. I think the government gave in to some extent and recognized it, but then, as usual, when it comes down to it, to try to collect benefits from the government, that's easier said than done. Some people claimed that it, some scientists claimed that it was only that kind of acne like Emmett had that was caused by exposure to Agent Orange. And the other one was
MASH.
Well, what was the role of it? Well, it was their favorite TV show, and Emmett must have been able to identify with it in some way, or it was closer to his experience than probably most other stuff on television. And it was humor, and Emmett has a kind of ironic sense of humor. It was quite sanitized compared to how such a scene really would have been, the way people talked and smoked in reality and things they did. But that was a comedy, which was, I thought, quite charming. Emmett may have gotten his idea for the skirt from Klinger, the guy who was trying to get out of the army by wearing women's clothes. I think that still works. I much prefer fiction because I'm not bound by the same kind of logic and actuality. It's very hard for me to write nonfiction. And when I do, I try to do it the same way that I write fiction, with imagery and sounds and characters and dialogues and scenes and themes and motifs and all the stuff that fiction has. But sometimes when you're dealing with ideas or history, that's more difficult. I don't have the mind to write that kind of thing. The bent, it's not to my taste.
I was just wondering, to you, who was Dawn?
Dawn?
Was she to the story? Because to me it seemed like Dawn was...
I guess in a literary sense, she was a foil, somebody to play off against. And I figure she would have a best friend, and it probably just grew from that. And she very much represents the kind of trap you can get into in staying in a small town. giving in to the conventions. You can get in a trap at a very early age. So I think Dawn rationalizes that, oh, well, Ken likes the idea of having a baby. And he's got a good job at the car wash. So, you know, it's a scene that, you know, is all too familiar, but Sam doesn't belong there. In that scene.
Earlier, you talked about some of the differences between the book and the film. Is it difficult for you as a writer to see them making changes for the films?
That one wasn't really problematic. I just wanted to be in it, and they wouldn't let me. No, I don't think they changed it. As I said, they were very respectful. They changed it a lot, but not the way they could have changed it, or the way most books get changed. So I was surprised. I thought if they got one thing right, that'll be okay. But they, you know, they did much better than that. But the thing I liked best was that it gave some recognition and sense of dignity to the local Vietnam veterans who were participating in the film. Well, Reed works in this place I told you, uranium enrichment, and he goes camping in the wildlife refuge, and the next morning, rain awoke him at the brink of dawn. The dripping rain made a sound like someone pounding on a fence post, leaving his camp undisturbed. He pulled on his slicker and zipped up his tent. Guided by his flashlight, he began slogging his way through overgrown brambles and wet vines toward the shimmering light of the plant, until he spotted a certain metal scrap heap some 200 yards away. He didn't go closer. He could see eerie blue flames licking the metal junk with tongues of fire nearly a foot high. In a gentle rain like this one, mysterious blue flames often erupted, flickering delicately like a gas fire on artificial logs. The flames were lovely, yet terrible, another of those elusive phenomena like a solar storm, a starburst that you strive to grasp but can't. They made him think about quasars, those distant blue lights in the firmament. One more. Reed works in this cavernous place full of machinery. He's a maintenance engineer, and it's very, very noisy and hot inside this thing, and he's losing his hearing, and it's 150 degrees sometimes. And it's dangerous. He's working in there. A bird was flying above him, its flight meandering and desperate. Birds slipped in under the eaves and often couldn't find a way out. The bird's wings fluttered silently. It crashed against the ceiling and the walls. Now and then it perched on a girder. Birds died here, delirious in the heat. The heat desiccated them, sucked out their juices, and kept them preserved like mummies. Or beef jerky. Reed had a pet dried bird he called Eisenhower. He had found him lying atop the asbestos housing of a cell. The bird was handsome, with black feathers and yellow streaks on his wings and face. He was a little thin, but with those crazed eyes, he seemed fully alive. Eisenhower stood on Reed's toolbox, his feet taped down. He was upright and realistic, with a mortician's grin. For verisimilitude, Reed had added a few white spots of caulking beneath the bird's tail. Everybody on the floor knew Eisenhower. Well, Reed is a kind of jokester and a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with Reed. Is that...
Thank you.
Thank you.